Today's episode was brought to you by the Harper Home Team, a realty team covering San Diego, Orange County, and Riverside County since 2000. A family business born and raised right here in San Diego with over 1,400 homes represented. And guess what? They're Padres fans. I know this because they're the team I personally use for all my buying and selling of all the homes that I have. I have so many homes. And we've talked a lot about Fernando Tatis Jr., maybe too much. More on that a little later in the show. If you're looking to buy or sell your home, call the Harper Home Team now. 760-456-5846. That's 760-456-5846. Or just go to harperhometeam.com. You have the internet. You can do this. harperhometeam.com. You get a free consultation to build your home buying roadmap. Do it.
Hey, I'm Scott Lewis, host of Voice of San Diego podcast and a Padres fan. If you like the kept faith and keeping up with the latest on San Diego sports, I think you'd like my show too. Every week I get together with my co-host to talk about the latest politics and policy. We try to make it fun and interesting, who's making the biggest decisions for our region, and we unpack the most important stories we think San Diego should know about. We release episodes every Friday, and you can subscribe wherever you listen to this show. Again, it's Voice of San Diego.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres.
Yeah.
Season's close, Padres. Nick. It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming right on time. No, they're not changing that at all, apparently.
Yeah, it's like back to normal, it seems like. Yeah. So here we go.
We're also joined by the host of the Padres Canon, Dallas McLaughlin.
Thank you for the plug. That's just amazing.
So you announced the show is starting last week. How many people begged you to join the roster?
You know what's funny? Nobody. I've had to beg people to be on it. It's been a mess. No, I'm just kidding. We've had a few guests so far. They've all been fantastic. Nick, you've done one with me. And we're going to, it's going to come out Wednesday. So this coming Wednesday, what is it? The 10th? I think it's the 10th. We will have the very first episode of Padres Canon. I'm very excited about it. It's going to be on the same feed as the Kept Faith, so no need to subscribe anywhere else. And it's basically where we nominate somebody, a guest comes on, nominate somebody to be in the canon, and Padres Twitter makes the decision on if they should be or shouldn't be. So it'll be interesting. A lot of fights, a lot of trolls, I'm sure. We'll have their fun. But at the end of the day, we all lose. So make sure to check out Padres Canon Wednesday on the Kept Faith feed.
All right.
Very cool.
Well, we have a very special guest today, Annie Halliburton from Fox Sports San Diego and the UT. What's going on, Annie?
I am so happy to be here with you guys. It's starting to feel more real, like the season is actually coming, you know? So thanks for having me.
Yeah. How do you feel in this new day of being past Trevor Bauer's contract situation? I feel like it's finally 2021. I don't know about you guys.
I'm so happy we are past that. I know Padres fans are probably disappointed. You know, he's with the Dodgers and whatnot, but I was just so happy that the decision was made and the whole, you know, him coming out with a YouTube video. Someone told me though, look, if I was making that kind of money, I'd come out with however I want to come out, do it however I want. Yeah. But I am glad that that is over. I will say that.
Yeah, I think I would have a videographer, a writing staff. I would just have my camp would be full of just really talented people. What about you,
Dallas?
That.
I think that's a good addendum to add to that statement, you know? Yeah.
I'm just glad he's not a Padre. I from the get-go, I said on this podcast, please don't sign Trevor Bauer. Like his whole thing that he is, whatever that is. Remember when Brian Wilson, the Giants closer, tried to be this thing? Like this character, he got a big old beard and tried to be weird. Like Trevor Bauer is doing the same thing where he's like this outspoken, I say it as it is. I just want him to shut up. Like he is a third, he's like a number three in most starting rotations. And he feels like thinks he's like Cy Young himself. I'm so over it. And people in LA are going to hate him. Remember when Randy Johnson went to the Yankees and it was a mess? Like it's going to be the same thing. He's going to get run out of LA so quick.
Yeah.
They already hate him because he came out and said that they should build a wall. like Trump's wall. Yeah. He's in favor of it. Oh, it's going to be such a mess. Oh my God.
It's going to be entertaining though. It is going to be, I mean, you have to think that it's going to get so chippy on that field between the Padres and the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, if they live up to expectation, both teams, which you think that they will, as far as close games and good series and things like that, it is going to be entertaining. That's for sure.
Well, doesn't he consider Machado his daddy? Isn't that already a thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's already intimidated by Machado. Yeah.
So. That was my favorite thing, was like the Padres account started tweeting out everyone's stats against Bauer. It was fantastic. It was
he really only has a special season in 2018 and then last year. So this could really blow up in their face. It's like 3 years, $102 million.
All the money ever been paid to anyone in baseball, basically, in this contract.
Silly.
Yeah. Yeah. $40 million a year. I mean, that's no joke.
Yeah. And you've worked at the stadium during some of these Dodgers Padres series. What's like the craziest thing that you've seen in your time, you know, actually trying to do a job while these people invade our stadium?
Yeah, I probably have a little bit more affection maybe for I know everybody's going to hate me for that, but even covering in San Diego, all, you know, the football games, the baseball games, with LA fans, I found them to be a little bit more, I don't know, normal maybe than other people do. But I will say, I am looking forward to the much of the pendulum not swinging in the favor of the Dodgers fans' way. I mean, you know, yeah. you figure if fans are allowed back in the stadium, yes, you know, there probably still will be a lot of Dodgers fans for the mere fact that they like coming down to San Diego, and who can blame them? I mean, it's a beautiful stadium. It's great food. It's fun time. So I don't begrudge that, but I'm excited for Padres players and Padres fans to even it out a little bit with the, you know, the level of play and the close games, hopefully, and, you know, more fans in the stadium and things like that, because it does get annoying, right? When you're sitting there and you're covering a game and you're just like looking around and you're thinking, wow, if I was a Padres fan sitting in the seats in the regular stadium, surrounded by Dodgers fans, it would be nice to have, you know, some more Padres fans around and some more things to cheer for. So I think that's probably going to be what's going to be, you know, the best part about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the hardest thing about it is just, having them be so comfortable when they come here, and hopefully, you know, even with the Trevor Bauer signing, which we can all agree is not that big of a deal because he's not that special, but that the moves that the Padres made this year have been so exciting, and the fact that if we do get to go back to the stadium and really stick it to these Dodgers fans and make it a little more uncomfortable for them, I think that'll be really good for the city as a whole.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there hasn't really been a rivalry, right? Not in like the past, you know, how many years. I mean, I remember we would go into the clubhouses and we would always, you know, do that question, the first series of the year. And it's like, you know, talk about the rivalry, and players would be so polite. They would politely kind of play into it, and they would say, yeah, like, this is the team, you know, that we need to beat. And, you know, they would kind of pay their respects to what the Dodgers have done over the years. But they knew that there was like really not a great chance that their roster was going to stack up with the Dodgers roster, you know? And so I think that there is truly going to be like a level of competition now that feeds into that whole narrative of a rivalry, you know, and they're going to be able to hang their hat on that. And so I think that's what's going to be a lot of fun, because in the past, like I said, they were very polite about it, but you know, those rosters were not stacking up and they knew it too.
Well, I think that San Diego fans might experience some kind of like whiplash, because the Dodger fans have always considered San Francisco as the true rivalry. And this year, that is not the case. Like, there's nothing, you know, interesting in that dynamic at all. But this year, all that focus, and some might call it hatred, some might call it intense fandom, whatever you want, will be directed, I think, at Padres fans. And it's going to be going from, oh, you guys are the cute little kids from San Diego, into, you know, our arch nemesis. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
And you know what's funny about that, Travis, is I still have a hard time wrapping my head around, how people view the Padres right now.
Right.
Because we're so used to how people have viewed them in the past 5-6 years. And I would do a story and and interview someone, and it's like, you know, they would kind of say, well, and the Padres, you know, and the Padres. And now it's like I interview someone, maybe, you know, a national baseball person or whatnot, and they are like enamored with the Padres. The Padres are a winning organization. The Padres are making moves. The Padres are on their way to the World Series. And of course, the Padres are going to have to actually perform on the field for all this to happen. But the whole narrative around the team has changed. And it takes me a second sometimes to remember, like, oh yeah, like this isn't the Padres team of 5, 6, 7 years ago, you know? So that's been a little bit of adjustment for all of us, I think.
I'm just excited that we're in people's tweets. Like, that makes me happy. Like,
you're in their head.
We're in the Dodgers fans' head, but even like the account, the MLB account on Twitter, the last like month has just been tweeting out so many Padres highlights. And you're right. Like, it's something we've never seen. We haven't seen that ever.
Yeah.
In the age of Twitter, we've never had this many superstars on our team. And it feels really good. And I'm also... you go, Travis. We're both too excited. You go.
I just say we never experienced respect before. We don't know what that is.
And honestly, I don't want it. I don't want respect. I just want you to shut your mouth and take it. That's all I want you to do. You don't have to respect me, but when it's all over, you're going to be crying, and I'm happy about that.
The Dodgers fans that are obsessed with us, I mean, they're obviously bad people, and bad people have holes in their hearts.
Yeah.
It turns out a 60-game joke of a title season doesn't fill that hole. So
the arrogance is it is interesting, right? It is from, I remember last year there was people that were DMing me or tweeting at me, like the media, the LA media was even so wrapped up in this, you know, not necessarily being unbiased, but being like, oh yeah, well the Dodgers are going to win it all. Now, of course, the Dodgers did, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, it would be nice to you know, just even out the playing field a little bit. I think I can totally understand and respect that for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the faces of this rebirth that the Padres are feeling right now is Fernando Tatis Jr. And I think what we've seen in this offseason is that he's really emerged as the next face of baseball and kind of ushering in this youthful exuberance that I think the generation coming up really identifies with. I mean, you've interviewed him and talked to him before, right? I mean, what is it like to be next to a budding superstar like that?
I wish people, you know, really, really hear me when I say he is like so down to earth. He is so nice to be around. I mean, he definitely has days, and this is of course when we were allowed to be in the clubhouse, but he has days where you don't approach him like any player, where he's a little bit more closed off and he's focused on something, and that is normal, completely normal. But he is not so closed off where he won't have a conversation with you. He won't joke around with you. He won't answer some questions. And when you reach the level that he's been reaching or he's ascending to, sometimes you find that with the superstar players is they become totally closed off. And in some ways it's understandable because they're being asked to do so much, you know, they're being pulled out from every angle, but he, for his age, has managed to do it so well to, like, you know, continue to forge relationships with the people around him and yet still be about his business and still keep the clubhouse light, which he has a really good way of doing, especially with the other Dominican players, but with every player, with every guy that's in there, he has a way of being funny and being fun and just not taking himself so seriously that he's completely, you know, shelled off. So I don't know if he'll remain that way forever, but I have a feeling he'll remain partly that way forever because I just think that's how he is and that's how his family is. And I think he knew how good he was a few years ago and he still was that way. And I think that I just think he's intentional about stuff. And when you're 22, I mean, I don't remember being intentional about stuff like that when I was that age. And he just has this kind of, and I think he has a great team around him too. But, you know, even I look at what he's done this offseason and, you know, really MLB The Show decided this is the guy that's going to sell our covers. This is the guy that's going to, you know, that's really what it comes down to, right? Like, yeah, of course he's great and he's so much fun and he's changing the game. But this is the guy that's gonna sell our game. And for him to be in that position and still just have like a humbleness to him and an understanding. And also just what that's going to mean for him. I mean, if he, again, I think a big thing about Tatis is he hasn't played a full season. And I think that he would like to get that full season under his belt and be healthy, just to kind of shut that up a little bit, shut up that distraction. But he does, he needs to play a full season. He needs to be healthy. He needs to kind of continue learning. And cause there's obviously things that he will say too, he needs to improve on. And we saw a big jump from year one to year two with him. So there's no reason to think he won't. But it's crazy to think, you know, what he's going to be even in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, because he has entered into it with such a great perspective. And I think it's good for the clubhouse. You know, I look at a guy like Manny and I think Manny is going to be the dark horse this year. I think Manny is going to come out and have another killer year, because I think, and I don't know this for sure, this is just me speculating, but I think Manny's also looking over like, you know, sit down, kid. Old man here is going to show you how it's done. You know what I mean? And I think that's good. Like there's a good, you know, a good healthy competition of that. They enjoy that. So I think that there's a lot of really positive things that are coming from this, from what he's been able to do.
Yeah. It does seem when one of them is happy, the other one is happy. Like I noticed that last season, like Fernando Tatis definitely had a moment last season or a few weeks where he just didn't seem very happy. And Manny Machado also looked down in the dumps. Like they play off each other really, really well. And that definitely influences the rest of the team. I mean, it's when they're dancing in the dugout, like no one doesn't have a smile on their face. And that's something we haven't seen in a long time.
Well, you know, another signing that we haven't really talked about on the podcast is Jerickson Profar being signed for 3 years. And you hear everybody talking about the signing basically has decided that they just liked having him around more than anything. He's just got this great attitude. I mean, Annie, you've covered
that job.
Yeah, I know. Right? Be a good hang and you get 3 years for $21 million. But yeah, I know. But like you've covered locker rooms in different sports. How necessary are those guys for successful teams? I mean, you've covered the Chargers in that situation. I mean, there must be a thing to having a combination of personalities like that.
There is. I think that sometimes GMs can get really caught up in the numbers, the stats, the, you know, all this, and they forget the humanity part of it. And there is a humanity part of it. And especially GMs in any sport that don't really, like I said, that focus a lot on the numbers and less on the personalities and just the human part of it. And that's probably also a balance between Jace Tingler and AJ Preller. I think that works for them at least right now. But, you know, Franmil Reyes was one of those for Tatis, and Tatis handled that very professionally, as he should, you know, when he was traded. But I do think that affected the clubhouse, and I understand why they did it. I absolutely understand why they did it, you know? But when you look at a guy like Jerickson Profar, who did battle through a lot of at-bats yesterday and did come in clutch
many
big moments, but he really is. He became Tatis's best friend very quickly. And they are, I look forward to being able to be around Jerickson Profar and have him, front and center a little bit more, because he literally is like just like this ray of light. Like he is just this, but also has an edge, also is like we're gonna go out and practice now, we're gonna go out and be good, we're gonna go out, like it's just a very casual like, but we're gonna work hard kind of personality. And that's kind of how Tatis is. So yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how they have all these moving parts now, right, because of Cronenworth and Profar and Ha-Sung Kim, and how's it all gonna fit and work together. But that's a question we have as well. But I think that you know, it's I think Profar will contribute in more ways than being the sidekick.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he can play like six good positions, right?
So, yeah. But it's good. And he has the opt-out. So I think that there will be incentive for him to continue to work hard and see if he can, you know, he can play that into something bigger for him. So yeah, there's a lot of question marks around all that, but you're right. I think that there is a fit there that is working for those guys for sure.
As somebody who drafted Jerickson Profar in his minor league fantasy baseball draft, what, like 8 years ago, and held on to him and stashed him for so long. I'm just happy he's in the mix. I'm just happy he's in the mix.
I commend you.
It makes me happy. Yeah, I love watching him play. I mean, I really do. Like, I think you said it last season, Travis, like your mom or something loved him because he just smiled all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just so much joy.
Yeah.
My mom loves him because he smiles all the time. My mom loves the guy's hair and people who smile. Okay. So one of the two of those things, like, my mom is all in on you. And yeah, like, that's, he's known as the player who smiles. And yeah. So, yeah, I definitely see that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple other players that I wanted to ask you about just because, you know, they're at interesting points in their career. I mean, one player that, you know, we've known for about 2.5 years now or 3 years is Chris Paddock. And what do you think he's going to be like this year? I mean, do you think that he has the ability to turn it around?
Yeah. What's Annie's crystal ball on Paddock? Yeah. We're ready for it.
I think that, so this is an interesting one, right? Because he went through kind of like the what you could call like a sophomore slump. I heard Larry Rothschild talk about, he really was one who didn't benefit, in Larry's opinion, he didn't benefit from a short season because Larry felt like he was finally getting on a roll and then he was having to shut it down again. And so he might be one where having a full 162 game season just allows him to breathe a little bit more, get back into a rhythm and get back on track. And he has said, and it's been said around him, that he really struggled with the empty stadiums. Now, it's hard to know, did every player struggle with that? Did some players, you know, find it easier to adjust to than whatnot, but it sounded like he really did struggle with that. Now he's going to have to perform either way, because certainly we don't know if there's going to be empty stadiums or not again this year, but he is someone who works his tail off and doesn't like to be counted out and works with that chip on his shoulder. We've seen that a lot with him. So I can't imagine that he is doing anything except like working his butt off and trying to figure it out and trying to get it fixed and trying to make sure that he has a dominant season this year, because now you look at that pitching staff, that rotation, and you're suddenly, you know, you're kind of in the middle of the pack, and there's a lot of guys that are around you that are projected to be very, very good. And you don't want to be the weak link. B, you don't want to be sat at any point, yeah. You know, or sent to a different, sat. But I think, yeah, does he have the ability to turn around? I do think he does. And I think that he believes he does. And so I think it's a matter of really shutting out the noise. We saw with him last year, and he even said some of the noise got to him from, you know, all that. So he's learning. And some guys, I think that you go through that. You go through kind of like this learning process of, you know, understanding who you are in this game and what you pay attention to and what you have to not pay attention to at all. It's really interesting with Chris Paddock, because I wonder if, you know, he came up, but what was it, the very first year, and he was like the sheriff. And I mean, the very first year, the very first game or whatever, the very first start. And there was just so much hype. And I do wonder sometimes, you know, if that, you know, I always wonder if that is detrimental to a player more than helpful in some cases. And that's not to say that he didn't work hard, because I think he works really, really hard on everything. But I think maybe he needs more time, you know, and I think when you come up and you're kind of anointed, and at that time he was the Padres' big starter, you know, which is so different from how it is this year. I think it's hard to adjust in a lot of ways. So I think this is going to be this is a long-winded way of saying, I think it's going to be a very important year for him, because he doesn't have the ability to rest on the past, you know, like he was able to maybe a little bit more last year.
Yeah. In October, you posted a piece about the players' families traveling to Dallas for the bubble, the postseason bubble. We don't know how that's going to go for this postseason. All we do know is the Padres will be in the postseason, right?
Yes.
We all agree on that. But
for certain.
What kind of toll do you think this is taking on the families of the players? I mean, these guys are going to be traveling a little bit, and who knows if there is some kind of bubble situation at the end of the year, who knows how that's going to play out. And what did you learn from doing that story? I saw that there was a, a Dodgers Padres shared swimming pool at the hotel that I'd like to hear some stories about. You can feel free to lie about it. I don't know.
Feel free to lie about it. First of all, I love your guys' optimism. And I too think that they have a very good shot at getting in the postseason, but I still stand by these guys. These guys did get better in the offseason, but like they're going to need to show, they're going to need to show that they can make a 60 game season into a 154 or 162. So I'm going to dissent a little bit off you guys there. Definitely think that they have the chance to get there. But yeah, they're going to have to show it now. They're going to have to put it all together. And I think that's a big storyline too, is like that 162 game season, how different that's going to be for them off that 60 game. But, I think here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that and I don't know if this is what it's going to turn out to be because they haven't come to a health and safety agreement, but I'm understanding that the players really want more freedom this year. They really want to be able to bring their families, bring their wives, bring their kids when applicable, and also go out more and not be confined to the hotel. Now, there's so many question marks around that, like as far as vaccines, and I don't know that they're going to have mandatory vaccines, and I don't know that they're going to get everything that they're asking for. And there's so much fluidity in this. By the time you put this podcast out, it's probably going to be old information, and they've come to some health and safety agreement that they're going to be in a bubble the entire season. So don't at me on that. But I do think that it took a toll on them last year to the effect where they don't want to do it again. They would like to have a little bit more leeway. And I don't know what that's going to look like, or maybe it will become more leeway as the season goes on, if that is what the agreement that they come to. But I do think it did take a toll. I think sitting in the hotel rooms took a huge toll. I think just not being able to go out, and it sounds so silly. I mean, there's, you know, I want to put it in perspective because there's people who dealt with a lot last year, and it was, you know, deaths and illnesses and things like that, job losses. But for them, you know, this is their job, this is their livelihood, and it probably in some ways can really affect, you know, your mental health, maybe to be away from your family, maybe for some guys, or to be confined to a room. At the same time, you know, you have it pretty good if that's like the least of your worries. So I don't have a good answer for that, because obviously every guy is different, and every guy, you know, is gonna need different things, you know. And I'm sure that they would all say that. So I think it's gonna be interesting to watch that this year, but I do think that they are, last year they dealt with it and they were, for the Padres, they did pretty well. Like they didn't really have any really, you know, big outbreaks or things like that. So I think that maybe even if there is broader rules, maybe the Padres team by team will instill some rules of their own to try to keep everybody safe, everybody good. But I foresee that, yes, there will probably be shared swimming pools again. And if you know, things aren't all the way open, then I definitely could see a Dodgers Padres shared swimming pool, shared everything, actually. Like they had to share their game rooms. They had to share, actually, no, I think that's wrong. They each had their own game rooms, but they did have to share the swimming pool. And I'm sure it was like Dodgers on one side, Padres wives on the other side, cat fights in the middle, all of that.
Well, it's not like we had an overrated third baseman who was COVID positive on the field celebrating and hugging people. So that'll be better this year, huh? Right? Right? Yeah. I took a jab at old Red.
Well, in my mind, the Dodgers kids have a real problem with running around the pool, and they cheat at Marco Polo. That's what I heard.
That's for sure.
Oh, okay. I can see that. Off the record, I can see that.
Heard that.
You know, but no, for real, Dallas, that was a scary moment. I mean, you got to think like, no, it was. I mean, you got to think
it
like,
was, yeah.
they're lucky that nothing major came from that, right? But it could have.
I mean, it was so confusing, and it was all happening. It seemed like it was all happening in real time on Twitter. Like Turner leaves, no one really knows why, and then it's that he's got a second positive test. But then it, like, he's on the field celebrating with everybody, and you're like, what are you doing? And like, then leadership, like, you know, the Dodgers execs immediately were like, well, we weren't going to deprive him the chance to have this moment. And I'm like, this moment could end up killing some of you. Like, what are you talking about? And then it came out like the next day that it might have been a false positive. Like, So it was so weird. And I honestly to this day, I will never understand the need for Turner to be out there and risk what he was risking, whether he knew, whether it was true or not, whether it was a false positive or not. I mean, I just can't see doing that. I just don't care.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing too, about like, if players want more freedom, which again, I don't, this is only what I'm hearing right now, and everything is changing day by day. But if that is the case, you would hope that, you know, at some point that doesn't happen until maybe the older staff and the coaches and whatnot are able to be vaccinated, because it's not just them that they're worrying about, that they should be worrying about. They should be worrying about the other people in their clubhouse and the staff that could get infected, you know? So hopefully that is the case. You know, like I said, I I don't want to begrudge what could be mentally difficult for them. But like I said, there's also people who have had to go through really tough times this last year. So there's probably some perspective and middle ground in all this.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. I feel a lot less worried about this season than I was last season. So that's something, but then that means I feel like everyone else is a lot less worried too. And that might end up being a bad thing.
You know, what's funny is it almost feels like in some ways it's like, because it, maybe everything, at least for now, seems like it's starting on time and things like that. It doesn't feel normal, but it feels like kind of, you're like mentally, you're kind of like, oh, it's kind of normal. And then you're like, no. And then it's like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just like, and we've all lived with COVID now for over a year, that I think we're kind of like, oh yeah, that's just what we do or whatever. But I don't know. I think it's, and I also think, listen, I know, and again, I'm not saying that the players can't do this. They can go to spring training, live in their own houses, be very vigilant about their own self-care, and perhaps make, you know, come out of it and not be ill, but or get anyone sick. But I think people underestimate when they look at like, oh, the NBA is doing it, the NFL is doing it, you know, they underestimate how much downtime these players have in spring training. I mean, these guys, it's monotonous, it's boring. They are in their own houses, they're not in a shared hotel. So it's really going to be on them to govern themselves in lovely Arizona, which is teeming with COVID, you know? Yeah. So I'm not saying they can't, but I think that those are the conversations that are being had right now that, that are important to remember, of just like, you know, like this isn't like you're playing a game every day and you've got to be down at the field. Like, you're getting out of there by 12, 1, and you got the whole day, and you're, you know, getting food and going to Target and going out, and there the bars are open. And again, I don't know what the rules are going to be, but I just think that there are differences between spring training and like the season and the NBA and all that stuff.
Listen, if you're looking to buy or sell your home, I can't recommend the Harper Home Team enough, because I use them to do both. They held my hand every step of the way, literally, because buying a home or selling a home can be scary. It's frightening, all right? Don't judge. This is a judgment-free zone. Jason and Rachel at Harper Home Team, they make it easy. They're honest, they have competitive commissions, and they're easygoing because they're born and raised in San Diego. They get it, all right? No constant calls, no constant texts. They know what they're doing from the start, with over 20 years of experience in Southern California realty market. Give them a call right now, 760-456-5846, or just go to harperhometeam.com, get a free consultation using realtors who actually know who Fernando Tatis Jr. is and also have a strong opinion on Eric Hosmer's future. Do it now, harperhometeam.com.
Well, Annie, right now, if you drive by what used to be Qualcomm Stadium, I mean, they're tearing it down bit by bit. And it does seem to be connected to this renewal we're feeling in San Diego sports, with the Padres being good. What are some of your favorite memories from covering sports in that building? I mean, while we still have it, what's left of it still standing on Saturday, February 9th or February 7th, 6th? What is it? I don't know.
Today's the
sixth.
Sixth. Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. Okay.
So I am so nostalgic, and people will laugh at me for saying this, but I especially started. I love Qualcomm, Jack Murphy, San Diego Stadium, and I really wish it could have like. I really wish it could have stayed. I just think it's such a big part of San Diego's history. I know it's falling down and needs to go. And believe me, there are so many times I sat in that press box and water like dripped on my head from God knows what sewer like was above me or whatnot. But and so I know it's not in good shape, but I think I wish that they sometimes could have been able to build a stadium using part of it, but there really wasn't, I guess, maybe that part to use. So that's all to say, it's sad. I'll be honest. Like I drive by it on the freeway and I don't think I've like processed it really, because it's just like sad to me. But it's, I think with the Chargers leaving and then getting to this point, maybe it's a little bit like, I don't know. It's a little bit, I don't want to say it's less sad, 'cause it's still sad, but it's just like, man, like this is like, I don't know. It is sad is what I'm trying to say. And I have a lot of great memories. And when I go back and I look at my videos from those times, like after games or with fans, like that's when I feel sad. 'Cause I'm like, wow, like the, you know, people generationally built so many memories on that site. They like, and players, you know, I love what Philip Rivers said. I think it was after the first time they were threatened to leave or whatnot, the first game, when he said, you know, there's so many players that have ran this field before us, you know, and you think about those players and the history that's been there. And it's just like, oh my gosh, like, and I know that's, you know, this is life, right? Things get torn down, things get built up, but it's just sad when you consider the way the Chargers left and the way Dean Spanos took that organization out. And then now this, it's just kind of like, man, what could have been, you know what I mean? What could have been? And I think about all the tailgaters and I think about just, yeah, like how many people have been doing that for 20, 30, 50 years with grandkids and so it really is, it's sad to me. And I love being part of that history. Like, and as you guys were, as so many people in San Diego were, whoever visited that stadium. So it's going to be really different, I think, but I do think you're right though. It goes with this, renewal of the Padres, where when the Chargers first left and the Padres were still not very good, you know, it was kind of like, well, what does San Diego do now? You know, like yeah. this terrible sports town and like, you know, this and that. And now it's kind of like, wow, I'm so happy for San Diego fans that they have something to cheer about. Like, I am just so happy that they have an excitement. They get to be excited to go to the stadium. And plus Petco is a beautiful stadium, but they just get to be excited about this team and about moves that are being made and be excited to watch these games. And like that hasn't really happened to the extent where it overshadowed the Chargers before. You know, we would get to like June or July as reporters, and they'd pretty much be out of it. And we would like peace out them, the Padres, like go cover the Chargers. And it was like all football from there. And if the Chargers were in town today, the NFL still a big deal, of course. But the Padres would give them a run for their money as far as you know, where fans want to spend their money and get season tickets and have a good time and things like that. So I'm sad about it. And I think I'm also sad about it just because of the way it went down, you know, just because of the way the Chargers left and everything like that, that it just, you know, it just really breaks my heart what could have been in San Diego and all the people, all the fans that just, you know, that just did everything they could to put love on that team.
Yeah. I was thinking about it. The history and stuff. And I was so excited one day to show my daughter, you know, my lightning bolt shirt that I had when we were in the human lightning bolt. And now they'll be like, well, who are the Chargers? And where was this parking lot that's now a university like building? Like nothing will be relatable to them at all.
No, you nailed it. Like before you could at least drive by the stadium and be like, oh, look, oh, yeah, that's, you know, like there's happened, a, yeah. You know what I mean? And whatever, you'd see the car shows there, whatever. And you'd be like, ah, there's the parking lot. It's so funny too, because, well, not funny, but it was really the last great tailgating stadium. And so many people would come. That was like their guys trip. That was their, you know, their girls trip, their family trip was to come to beautiful San Diego. And you overlook the stadium because the rest of it was so great, you know? So, and that's another thing, you know, you just wish that maybe renovations could have been made earlier on to keep it standing or whatnot. But, you know, all that is coulda, woulda, shoulda. It ultimately boils down to, I think the way that the team left and just kind of the hole that it left for fans and the way that they left, I just feel like, and I will just continue to say this. It was just, it was so wrong to the fans of San Diego, the way it happened, you know? And so, yeah. So I say, go pay your respects, I guess. Go take some pictures. I don't know if you guys bought any. I've seen people buying like the seats and things like that, but I have some pictures from there that, you know, now I look back and I see them and I look at them more fondly now.
Yeah. I think I still have like a hot dog from there when I bought one. I think I have it wrapped in foil. It's still good. It's still good.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I drive by every day to drop my son off at preschool and, you know, I immediately start talking about it and he's starting to ask like, why do you keep talking about this? And it's like, and I think that's all connected to Tatis's energy too. It's like,
yeah,
he has no relationship to that loss at all. He just is awesome. And he's in San Diego being awesome. And he doesn't have any of that pain, doesn't have any of that loss at all. And I think the generation coming up who you are going to idolize Tatis, it's just going to be this real crack in the history for San Diegans where they have this new Padres team that competes against the Dodgers, and the Chargers is just something for us older people who get to be upset about for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, but it's like, yes. Yeah. But I hope that people, like, I like that you still ask about it. I think, you know, it's such an important piece of our history, and it is important to the Padres revival, you know? So I think that it all goes together. So I think that it's a really important part of it all. But, and of course the trouble with that piece of history is that, you know, you get the people that are like, it's business and San Diego didn't love them anyways. And like all this other just, you know, BS for lack of a better word. And So, I mean, it's so hard to get into that conversation in a meaningful way and go through everything. But yeah, I think that it's definitely going to, you know, maybe there'll be like some kind of 30 for 30 on it someday or whatnot, but it definitely left a void. And yeah, you're right. People are going to grow up looking at this Padres team and looking at San Diego as like a Padres town. You know what I mean? Where before, you guys know, like it was always a Chargers place, you know what I mean? And so, it is really interesting what's taken place and yeah, it's,
yeah.
Don't you guys feel like it was like a lifetime ago? Like, I feel like I covered that team as another life. You know, I'm like, I covered that team like day in and day out for like almost 10 years. And it feels like I could have been born again for real. Like, I'm like, who, like, just because it just feels so long ago, like so removed, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I honestly, until someone reminded me today, didn't think the Super Bowl was tomorrow. Like that wasn't even on my radar. Like I've totally actually been devoid of the NFL and it's bizarre. It feels like, oh my gosh, I was a very hardcore NFL fan in a previous lifetime.
Well, I have this feeling on Sundays in the fall where my whole day is not built around like eating like crap and drinking and watching football. It's like I get to exercise and read
other things,
and engage with my family,
you and know, not be like, mad.
Like, yeah, yeah, I know. And not be upset at some loss where Norv Turner's looking confused on the sidelines or something like
that. I will say too, like with the Padres, and you guys know the differences in the ownership, but it's like with the Padres, I really do think that they look at this team like a community asset. Yes, they're going to make money. Yes, it's a business and all that. And of course, profiting is part of it. But I really do think that they look at this team like part of San Diego, you know, and it's just so different than, you know, how the Chargers necessarily looked at, especially towards the end there, you know, but I think that that is what makes kind of this period special to them too. Like, I think that they love the fact that like San Diego has something to be proud of again, you know, and they should. So I think that's really cool too.
I think, I mean, it bums me out that we're spending any time on the Chargers at all, but I think one of the things that like made the Padres did differently than the Chargers, and we talked about this, you know, years ago when it was all going down, was that the Padres got a new stadium because they put a team on the field that, you know, went to the World Series, and they were smart about it. And the Chargers were just like, hey, we're football. Why can't we have a new stadium? And you're like, well, when's the last time you went to the playoffs? Like, it was just, you know, they did it the weirdest way possible. And they, you know, I'll never forgive Spanos for the way he treated the fans, because he really tried to make it seem like it was our fault for not doing everything that he wanted. And at the end of the day, if you can't afford to build a stadium for your team, maybe you don't deserve to own one. because he's now renting from somebody who could afford to build his team a stadium. So it's, you know, to me, like, he's just as trash as anybody else who was involved in that decision. And I think the Padres, I think they were smart about it from even back then, understanding their role in the community, where, like, you know, you're saying it feels like a lifetime ago that this all happened, and it does. But I also don't remember a time being a Charger fan where they weren't threatening to leave San Diego. Like, I mean, I think I was 13 when they were threatening to leave San Diego. So, it, you know, they've always had this in the back pocket, and, you know, I don't know, f*** them.
Oh. you know what's great,
bleep it if you want, I don't care.
It's like, we're gonna have two types of people listening to this podcast. One type is gonna be like, oh yeah, trip down memory, oh yeah, we're totally jiving with you. And the other one is gonna be like, I can't believe you guys talk about the Chargers.
I know, and I totally get it.
I try to respect that. I mean, we try, it's funny because we try not to talk about the Chargers a lot, just because we feel like there's so much toxicity around it. And there's so many other things to focus on now, you know, that it really, you get dragged down this, like, really, it's so hard to explain to people, like, because people are so nuanced on, like, well, what about this? And what about this? And it's like, you know, very, very rarely does someone look at, like, take the comprehensive look on it. But, so yeah.
What are you going to do for the Super Bowl tomorrow, Annie?
No, you know what? I'm going to get up. I'm going to work out. I'm going to, you know, just kind of chill and all that. I'll probably watch it because my dad is a big football fan. And so now with COVID, I don't get to spend as much time with him. So I'll definitely pay attention. And I do like Mahomes. And I think that there's, you know, some good storylines there with Brady and stuff like that. But, and also the commercials and all that stuff. But I definitely will not be hanging on it by, you know, like, in, you know, watching every second and things like that. I think now it's like, if I rarely watch, I'll watch, you know, just to kind of stay up on some stuff and just to kind of keep myself sharp in some ways. But very rarely is it appointment viewing for me. Very, 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 very rarely, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at with it now.
Yeah.
What are you guys? Do you guys watch?
I'm going to watch. I turned 44 in a few weeks here. And so
Happy birthday. I'm fascinated.
Thank you, that Tom Brady and I share the same age. I cannot imagine.
All you need are like hyperbaric oxygen chambers and like your own shadow. I mean, like, you just need things like that and you'll be just like Tom Brady. You look very young, Travis.
Oh, so thank you. But the fact that we share the same age and that what he's doing right now and what he did this year without the framework that he had before. I mean, it's just, that to me is a remarkable story. I've never loved Brady, but what he's doing right now is.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, I can feel it in my bones, I guess is what I'm saying. I feel it in my bones.
I watched the Browns this playoffs. I mean, that's probably the most football I've watched in years, was that I was really, you know, I was born in Ohio and moved here when I was three. So I'm not really an Ohioan, but I have a lot of love for the Bengals and the Browns. And I was happy that they were in the playoffs. And so I watched those games.
But, I love the Browns. The Bills. Yeah,
it was fun. The Bills are always fun to root for. Yeah. But at the end of the day, like you said, I think Mahomes is a cool story. My neighbor is a giant Chiefs fan. So that's, you know, I hear a lot of yelling on Sundays from him. But Mahomes is a cool story and Brady's a cool story. I'll watch.
Yeah, I tomorrow, mean, my, you know? My wife's a Patriots fan, so I'm going to be watching her process this. If you'd like to see my insights, follow me at Nicholas_McCann. I live tweet the Super Bowl.
It's going to be good.
Taking pictures of her. She's acting like she's not, it's not bothering her, but I think it's kind of jarring to watch him be successful on another team.
I mean, a Patriots fan has got to have such a deep affection for Brady, like, right? Like, almost
they do.
Like,
oh, yeah,
sibling,
they do.
They, parental kind of.
They do.
Yeah, I can't imagine that process. Yeah.
They're pretty positive about rooting for him to win. You know, I don't. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, why not? I mean, why would? Yeah, there's. It's not like he left in a weird way. You know, it's the way a lot of players leave their team when they kind of get older, and then you're looking for one more big contract. And I think he did enough for New England. I don't think they need to hate him. Yeah.
Well, before this,
I will say this tomorrow though, I did co-write a commercial that'll be in the Super Bowl.
Right.
So if you if you're watching the first half, look out for the Dr. Squatch commercial.
All right.
That is awesome.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's
cool. I will definitely look out for that.
Congrats. Dr. Squatch. That's awesome.
Yes,
thanks. It's not like I didn't get paid more because of that.
still, but still cool.
It's fun. It's quick and it's fun.
All right.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. Well, it's like Bobby getting to be in, I don't want to pop in my head, but Bobby is going to be playing the organ on MLB The Show. It's kind of like that. It's when you get to know people that are doing something.
It's cool, man.
Live in infamy. Yes.
Well, here's what's sad about that is that Bobby then tweeted that he's been doing that for like the last 4 years.
And none of us really knew.
What did he do? Yes. Yeah. He's like, just to say I've been the organist for this
they
for like
need
four
to animate
games.
Animate him like, what? At Petco. That's what they
I know, right?
That Bobby is one of those people that if you talk to him, there's some nugget that he throws in there that's just like a casual nugget that's like, oh yeah, I played music with, you know, Frank Sinatra back in the day or whatever. Like, it's just like, you know what I mean? Like, there's some that's the guy he is. It's just like,
I don't know. I don't know how COVID is going for him because he's just such a hugger. He's got a lot of nice hugs. I don't know how he's doing with COVID. I mean, I hope he's getting through it.
Hugs to Bobby.
Virtual.
He did just drop a EP called Demosa, which is really good. It's on
really cool
on Spotify. Yeah, it's like quieter piano music. So everybody
it's been
check
hard
that
to
out.
Be creative in this thing. So I commend him because it can be difficult.
Bobby Cressy, Spotify, make it happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, Annie, thanks for coming on. We love having you on the Kept Faith podcast. Check her out on Twitter and check out the Padres canon coming out on Wednesday.
Yeah. Very excited. I won't say who the first guest and player is because let's just say both the guest and the player they nominated are both controversial people.
Oh, wow. That's good.
Yeah. It'll be a good one. Be a good one to start with.
So, all right. Well, thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast and check us out on the kept faith.com and we'll see you next week. Bye.